Welcome to the Ugly Buddies. My name is Steven.
My name is George.
George, yes. But we're having, like, a guest assignment.
Yes, we are. And I am thrilled to introduce our next guest, today's guest. He created a fabulous one-man show at the 2021 Hollywood Fringe. That's how him and I met. Because my one-man show is Experiencing Love on the Spectrum. And his show was called Versatile. Fabulous one-man show about the trials and tribulations of growing up half Black, half white, and gay. And
oh, I heard about your show.
Oh,
yeah, okay. I heard of it. Like, I heard that when I was looking at one of my shows, like, oh, that sounds interesting, but I could only.
And Steven is actually in the middle of creating his own one man show. So if there's any,
you didn't come to my show.
I'm sorry. Don't blame me. Blame my work schedule. And we're talking about season 3, episode 11, Dress for Success.
Yes.
Oh, I loved it.
I loved it too. I loved some Nikki Blonsky.
Me too.
Everything.
I'll never forget seeing Hairspray when it came out in theaters.
Yeah. Like, what do you think about the episode?
Look, so my mom and I actually used to watch Ugly Betty together. Okay. So George, when you're like, it's literally about Ugly Betty. I was like, what? Okay. I never finished the show or remember any of the show. At all. But then as I started watching this episode, I was like, okay, cool. This is awesome. I'm here for it. I love just America Ferrera, right? That's how you came in. Yeah. I love her as an actress. I think she's great. I watched all of Superstore and didn't realize it was her until like later. And then I was like, oh man, like I loved Ugly Betty too. But when I started watching this episode, I was like, kind of easing into it, being like, what world am I in? And I just, you know, the thing I love about about Ugly Betty is how you're just completely immersed into this world of like fashion, internship, and failure, right? Is kind of like how I would describe the entire show. But the part that stood out to me, I'm really glad you chose this episode, George, because I felt it in my soul. Because I've been doing networking and all of this stuff, and it's so superficial sometimes.
Yes, yeah. It's the worst thing in the world. It's like, why do I need to network?
But that's part of the industry we
it
have.
It is. It's so gross.
Like, it makes me feel like I'm fake, but I'm not.
Yeah, here and listen to it, and then once you realize that some people are just kind of like hopping around at these things, it's just like, ooh, it becomes like you walk away knowing nobody. And just having people to call on favors for. And that was what was really interesting is like adding even the favors component. Cause I have people now that are like, that I'm calling on favors for that I've networked with, right? And I'm like sitting here going, okay, like, hey, let me send you this, let me send you that. Hey, can I get some help here? And those relationships oftentimes feel more superficial than I feel like they should. And I think this episode did a really good job of showing that, like, you don't know people. Are we allowed to give spoilers?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about the whole episode.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and then for, like, you know, at the end, when that guy, I don't even know his name, but the reporter has, like, a whole other family life, and he's got his alter ego thing going on. I'm like, you didn't even know this person, you know? And you never know who you know.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's crazy.
Yes.
And then the people that are going to come in and cut you. Like, Nikki, was that her name?
Yeah, Nikki Blossy's character, yeah.
I saw that phone, I was like, nah, she's not going to, she did.
And one of my favorite parts about this episode, like, one of the best parts about this episode, two words, Bernadette Peters.
Yes, or as my friend calls Bernadette Peters, the original Queen Bee.
Who's Bernadette Peters? I'm so sorry, I'm so bad.
Broadway legend extraordinary.
She's the one with the red hair, the red curly hair.
Oh God, did I just embarrass myself really bad?
Okay, she is a Broadway legend, but that's okay.
I mean, I feel insulted a little bit.
Look, I mean, I'm horrible with names, and I'm extremely uncultured. Whether it's cultured white or cultured black, I have zero culture.
Period. All right, I'm gonna help. Have you ever seen Animaniacs, the original?
Of course, yeah.
You remember remember the cat who sings?
The pink one.
No, like the cat who sings atop of the dog?
Yes.
That's Bernadette Peters, who's singing, the cat who sings.
Okay, all right.
Well, I have another one. Did you watch Cinderella from the 90s with Brandy?
I was in diapers.
Okay. It is on Disney Plus, just
so I do have Disney Plus. I have that.
Disney right? Plus. Okay.
I mean,
it was just so you know, it was a big cultural movement for the Black community in the 90s to see a Black girl playing Cinderella, and Whitney Houston was the fairy godmother. It was a very big deal.
Oh, see, I wasn't allowed, because I was adopted by a white family. I was encouraged to look at Black anything.
That's really sad because there's so much great content there you missed out on.
I kind of feel you, because even though I grew up in a Black family, like all the people I hung around with was basically white, and I watched all these white shows, and now I'm trying to get back to my Black culture, but I knew about Black stuff. But
yeah, I didn't even know about Black stuff. I had That So Raven, and that was like the show that I was allowed to mess with.
Did you ever watch Clueless, the TV show, or the movie?
I've seen Clueless, the movie, yeah.
I watched Clueless, the TV show. That's, oh God, how old I am.
Yeah, but I like, I liked...
Stephen and I are both big That's So Raven fans, so you're not alone there. We're both big fans.
Me too. Literally, that was my favorite show. I'd be like...
My favorite Raven episode of all time is when she has the stinky science partner. And she signs them up for the dunk tank. She's like, can't y'all aim at anything? And then they all start throwing them at her.
I remember that. Oh my gosh. I love Chelsea.
Yes.
I had the biggest crush on Chelsea.
Annalise Vanderpool. I love her.
We got to talk about Ugly Betty.
I want to say my favorite episodes of That's a Raven real quick, because I have a few. I have the Halloween episode. When they turned to cows, I watch that every year. The Christmas episode, when they were doing the pageant, Little Miss and her big sis. That's when they made the big giant pizza. When Raven was writing from the actress Adrian Ballon. Oh my gosh, God, I'm old.
As we were saying about Ugly Betty.
About Ugly Betty, that makes me feel older. than I actually am.
That's not that bad. Yeah. Ugly Betty. So I liked, I also liked how the intern, like I forgot how emotional the show was, right? And I really was like rejuvenated by the drama that was going on between Betty and her sister, and her not showing up for dad. And I was like, damn, this is like dramatic content. And it was really cool. And then the intern looking at, I just watched the show. I hadn't seen it in at least, 10 years, 8 years, something like that. But the boss lady, when she like throws her other intern under the bus.
Yeah.
Fudgesicles. That was like, that was hard. And then he confronts her about it, and it's really, that was really touching.
Yeah, like I haven't seen this episode since I originally watched it when it aired back in 2009. That was still high school me.
That was college for me.
Gross. I didn't like me back then.
Who did? A lot of us didn't, or a lot of us just didn't know ourselves back then.
Still don't know myself.
Because all three of us are part of the rainbow crowd. So.
The rainbow connection.
Gotta say.
I remember, like, me when I watched the ending, when you talked about the ending, like, I was like, oh my gosh, I remember how this affects the rest of the season. And all the memories of the rest of the show was coming up in this episode. It was like, oh my gosh.
I started watching the episodes afterward. Like I gotta watch morning shows, so unfortunately I'm probably not gonna be able to dive deep into Ugly Betty, but next time I have like the flu or like I might have to just sit down and be like, all right, it's an Ugly Betty vomit party.
We have had one of our guests go back and binge the entire show after she was a guest on our episode.
I'm tempted.
She needs to be a guest again.
Yes, she does.
She should.
Yeah, like I, after like this show is like perfect. Like it's kind of like feel good. It was family. That's how they marketed the show when it came on air the first time, it was just like a good fun show for your soul. Like you have Wilhelmina, Daniel, Betty, Mark, Amanda.
You have the office element, but then you have the home and family element.
Yeah.
You have her life in Queens and her life in Manhattan.
Yeah. Right.
So,
well, and you know, I think that was the first and last serious, like as in serious as in like high caliber, well-marketed, well-received sitcom. If it is a sitcom, I mean, is it? It's a sitcom.
Even though it was an hour show and it was more of a dramedy, they did always put it in the comedy category.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a dramedy, and I remember now being like, oh wow. I think you know that's the first Mexican American. I think they're Mexican American.
Yep.
Show that like showed Mexican culture. You know, the value of family and those important things that like now I couldn't name, and I could be wrong because I'm not watching too much TV as it stands right now, but I can't name another show that features like a Mexican family.
There's One Day at a Time. There's a Love Victor.
Yeah.
Love Victor.
Yes, it is a Mexican family, but that's a gay show. You know.
But that's why we brought up Love Victor in our last episode, because think about it. You got to see Anna. Have you watched Love Victor, right?
I have not, no. I've seen some of it.
Anna Ortiz is also in Love Victor, who's Hilda in this show, Betty's sister.
Who is?
Anna Ortiz.
Oh, is she? I love her.
Yeah, she's the mother in Love Victor.
Oh, you know what? I did know that. Because she comes out to him at or mm-hmm. he comes out and then she's there. I remember that scene.
Yeah,
I didn't like the style of the show. Like I felt like it glorified the and this is my own, like this is my aesthetic. It doesn't match my aesthetic because it's like the whole like I'm gay and I'm out and everything's better and fine, but my family hates me. It just gave me this vibe of like that's not really what I felt like growing. Like there was no sexy man that you know. Was on the DL that, you know, like that to me.
Not for me.
It feels like fantasy. Yeah, not for me either.
I think that's the
DL football player.
That's how it's been, especially like when it comes to like gay shows, especially in the 90s, early 2000s. Talk about that. It's always been like when young gay kids are closeted about to come out, there is, especially in the high school settings, it's always that closeted hunky football player or something, like talking about like there's this gay movie, indie gay movie back from the 90s when dinosaurs ruled the earth called 17 Again. Do you see mm-hmm. the gay 17 Again? There was that closet again. This is just
well, one of the things
I don't believe a single person that tells me I believe them. I just doubt them. I like go like let me listen to more of your stories. When they're like, yeah, I used to suck off the jocks inside the locker room. It was hot. They loved it. I'm like, mm-hmm, yeah, you did. Of course you did. Sure.
Well, you know. One of the things I wanted to say about Love, Victor, which is one of the reasons why I enjoyed it, was you got to see Anna Ortiz play a completely different mother to a gay child.
How is she to his... I haven't seen it, but okay. You can spoil it. You tell me.
Okay.
How is it different?
Well, obviously, Hilda and Ugly Betty was very accepting of her son's sexuality, and she didn't care. She figured he is who he is, whereas in Love, Victor,
he's gay. I was picking up on it. I was like, is it? I don't remember.
They haven't gotten to his coming out announcement yet on the show, but it is a slow progression to that.
Yeah, I'm watching
it. It's the best slow burn of it coming out. That's how what I read. Sylvia Horton.
He wanted it to be a slow burn.
He wanted it to be a slow burn until
he wanted it to be a progression. Show.
Yes, because yeah, but talk about.
But for Love, Victor, you got to see Anna Ortiz play a mother who was a strict conservative Catholic who had a hard time accepting her son's sexuality. So I mean, if we're ever lucky to get Anna Ortiz on here, I'd want to talk about like what's the what was that like to play a second time playing a mother to a gay child, but a completely different mother who had a hard time accepting her son's
sexuality. Well, I'm sure she, you know, she understands both sides, just like within the Black community. I mean, being gay is not cool. Like,
oh,
my friend, I'm like, oh, I'm trying to go to Christmas.
I tell you so many stories about growing up and stuff I'm still dealing with being Black and gay. That's
My cousin told me, my older cousin, who's basically like an auntie, she told me, she said, because I met my biological family, just a little fast forward, okay? And so she told me, she's like, yeah, you and your cousin, you guys have your thing, right? And when she says, you guys have your thing, she was referring to our homosexuality. Won't say it outright, won't say the words. It's totally loving and like supportive, but for whatever reason, can't say that out. And I know, I understand that Mexican culture is similar, which is why I like really enjoyed how, I think sometimes flamboyant gets used around like almost like it's derogatory, but like expressive, I guess, that expressive of his femininity that Betty's sister's son has, you know, and how loving like the grandpa even, you know, is. And I just like, I was really, that show was so
groundbreaking,
monumental, because it does show like, you know, what happens to interns, you know, inequality in power relationships within office structures. And then also at the same time, doesn't like, I liked how they didn't dehumanize the bitchy ass, like, fashion bosses that they have, you know, where they're like doing some messed up stuff. And she even says like, yes, I like to look down at the little people living their little lives. And I was like, oh my God, that's like some, it's a line of a supervillain, you know, but I still love her. Yeah. Right? Like her.
Vanessa Williams does a great job at humanizing it.
Yeah. And I just, you know, maybe it really, I mean, geez, George, thank you for having me on and making me go back and watch this. Cause I just realized like what my mom and I loved when we watched it. Like, I'm going to have to call her up after this and be like, hey, I watched Ugly Betty and talked about it for 45 minutes.
Yeah. So let's dive more into this episode. Would you like to?
Well, where would you like to?
I want to pick up the relationship. There's so many good places to talk about this episode. Like, let's go back to the whole networking thing.
Well, I love that montage where Betty had like her laser focus to network, because that really is what it is like to network. You really have to read the room, and you really have to focus in on people.
The target acquired thing? Is that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought that whole montage was brilliant with the laser focus and inside Betty's mind and lasering people, because that really is what networking is.
Yeah, you have to judge. You could judge by how people carry themselves, who's important and who's not important. But for me, I talk to almost anybody.
Yeah, I'll talk to everybody. So
I feel like people think that I'm like an extrovert, and I am, but I'm totally not. Like, put me in a room full of people, I mean, I get so just like shy and don't want to talk, but then I know how to go, all right, you know, pull that crap out of me. And I like really appreciated, because I think that, you know, Betty, she goes into it being like, oh, I don't like these things. And I'm like, yeah, me neither, you know. And she talks to, and I do this. I do this so bad. I will go to these things and I'll find the wait staff or like the freaking bartender or somebody who's somebody that I know that I shouldn't be talking to for hours. And I'll talk to them for like 45 minutes, or I'll talk to one person for 45 minutes when I should be working the room. And when Betty comes back, she was like, wow, he was so nice. And like, that was the bus boy. He's like, yeah, his life is so interesting. I totally related to that, you know, just like not wanting to just bounce around and have meaningless conversations, you know?
Yeah, because for me, especially, like, I don't just want to be like, you know, how this industry is. That kind of is. It's just like, you know, I don't want to be fake. I'm me.
What I always do is, I mean, I try to remind myself, it is called show business for a reason. It's not just about the show. There is the business side of this industry too. And what I try to think of it whenever I'm going to events to network is, look, I'm just here to sell myself. If you want to buy my product, great. If you don't, moving on.
So, yeah.
I mean, I just try to think of it like a business transaction. And I know that it can be exhausting. It can be draining, but it is show business, and this is the part of the industry that I hate, but I know that it has to get done.
Yeah. I try to, when I go to networking stuff, I try to be as genuine as possible.
Absolutely.
And I think that when, you know, for me, when I sit there And if I'm not feeling somebody, like, I walk away, you know, because I'm like, this is, like, you were intolerable to listen to. I don't like to hear all about everything that you've done while you just, like, don't let me respond. And then I say something, like, I respond, and they're like, yeah, yeah, me. I'm like, okay. And so I really do find...
Yeah, I'm the person, like, let's nerd out and talk about Judy Garland in the corner for a good 20 minutes.
See, I open up every, I don't open up, but, like, anytime I do networking stuff, I always bring up Star Wars or some nerd shit. George, you've probably seen me do this a gazillion times. In fact, at the last, like, little party we went to, I talked about Star Wars for, like, 30 minutes. But I know if somebody likes Star Wars, those are my people.
You know, and that's why I will walk away from you when I hear Star Wars and be like, ah!
Later. Whereas I've seen all the movies, so you're in good company with me.
Exactly.
My favorite is still A New Hope.
I have never seen Star Wars a day in my life.
Yeah, the first one will always be my favorite. I love the payoff endings. I get why people like Jedi better. I mean, Empire better, but I like A New Hope better. I like the payoff endings. That's just
I don't know. I think I we'll go back to Ugly Betty, but I think Luke Skywalker had a really bad transition into, like, whatever he was supposed to be, this powerful Jedi. You know, I didn't like that. A New Hope.
I will say I've seen a bit of Star Wars: The Clone Wars.
Okay, that show is amazing, and thank you.
It is. All right, because my brother used to watch it, and I watched it over his shoulder. Like, yeah, it's all right, I guess. Whatever makes you sleep at night.
But back to Ugly Betty.
Let's talk about Nikki Blonsky's and Betty's relationship.
Well, I mean, Nikki Blonsky was fresh off of her success with Hairspray, so it was great for her to get this.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I remembered this episode, rewatching it, going, oh, yeah, that's right, her character is a snake.
Yes, and I love that
Elle Magazine, by the way, played along with this.
Yes. This is the second time they did it.
That shows me what a good sense of humor Elle Magazine has,
because
they were willing to go along with it.
George, this show is so made for you. It is literally, this show is created for the soul that's inside your body. Because I've heard of Elle Magazine, but I love how they encapsulate, I think that's the word, encapsulate, like tabloid culture in this episode.
Yes.
It was so, I'm like, oh man, they even got like the broken off hand holding the girl and everyone's talking about it. And then it dawned on me, when the big boss lady again, I'm sorry, I don't remember. Say it again.
Vanessa Williams character, Wilhelmina.
Like when she at the end of the episode, when she has her laptop up and she's looking at the scandal that is going on with all of her rich friends, and they're all like so low-key concerned about it, but like not really concerned about it. And it made me go like, wow, these like super powerful people, this is how their information travels, is through magazines. Like, we hear it, like, somebody sends somebody a text message, blah, blah, blah. And for them, it's like, oh, yeah, this bitch that I don't like at that other magazine is having an affair. So I'm going to use that against her and try and take her down so that I can gain leverage to get more viewership on my magazine. Yeah. And I was like, well, that's such a... And you see it. You kind of see it unfold with, you know, who's dating who in hip-hop and who's dating...
There's another movie that just came to mind that addressed the same exact thing, which is magazines stealing from each other. 13 Going on 30.
I don't know if
you've seen 13 Going on with Jennifer Garner.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, remember how it was discovered that she was selling the stories to the rivaling magazine?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that. Remember, she was leaking information to Sparkle magazine, which was the stuff that she was doing in her magazine Pose.
I like my BuzzFeed quizzes. That's my media. Which Harry Potter character are you? Which Ugly Betty character are you?
I already know what character I would be.
What's the intern's name? The white intern?
Mark?
I'm Mark. I totally feel like I'm Mark, unfortunately.
Well, assistant, not assistant, an intern.
Yeah.
Assistant, yeah, yeah.
Assistant.
What's the difference? Underpaid, underprivileged.
And... What else do I want to talk about this episode?
One of the things that I really noticed about this episode that I took note of actually was I feel like this is one of the first episodes where you don't get to see Betty fix it. Mm-hmm. You don't get to see her save the day, because usually in every episode, there's a problem. Betty's the hero. Betty's the one who comes in and steps the day. But this time around, this was something she couldn't fix.
She eventually saved the dress, but you know.
That was it. That was she can't save them all.
And she had to choose between, and that's another thing that about this episode, choose your career or choose your family.
And that's such a hard balance when you're trying to balance both career and family. And this show really did address that. Yes.
Choose your personal life or your career.
Yeah.
And how
that hit me on this episode. Because I'm even dealing with that right now, where like I'm writing something with a friend, and then I just finished up writing something for me. And I'm spending so much time in this room plus my other job. And I'm sitting here feeling like, I don't know the last time that I even said hello to my boyfriend, you know? I mean, obviously that's an exaggeration, but
yeah. It's exhausting. It's a difficult, exhausting balance.
Yeah. And I feel her, because like you see her, she's like, you know, she loves her family so much.
Yeah.
And I, you know that she thinks that like this is the pathway to help the family in the future. You know, like this is my career. It's going to give me opportunity to be a better, you know, daughter, sister, auntie. But they need her then, you know. Yeah. And I love how her sister kind of just like forgave her, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
By the end of it.
Well, at the end, I think her sister understands, okay, you're not going to be here for everything, but I get that this is your career and this is everything you want, so.
But she did make the gesture, I'm assuming, to move back in. That was at least laid out, right?
Mm-hmm. That's how it goes in that direction of Betty starts moves back in to the family, but that's not for another couple episodes.
Yeah.
Okay. Or does she go back?
Yeah, and what else do I want to talk about? Daniel and her,
his love interest.
His love. Ugh, that hot mess of a shit show.
Yeah. And once again, Wilhelmina sees an opportunity to keep playing the chess game, because she's like, okay, I can step in there and take Connor, since Daniel has a thing for Connor's fiance. So once again, the chess game that Wilhelmina always plays.
That was so weird. Like, what? Why were they? I mean, I guess when you're that powerful, like, you have appearances to keep up. But, like, you know, if you don't love them,
yeah,
walk out. I mean, I'm being a hypocrite now because I spent 5 years with a really bad man. But, like, you know.
That's life. Sometimes life affects you that way.
And I love Wilhelmina's dress at the party. Mm. I did take down a note. Fabulous dress he was wearing at the party.
Was that like, gray, like, kind of patterned one? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really gorgeous. I noticed that too.
And it's like, and now the fiance broke up with Connor.
Mm. And then Connor went to Wilhelmina, and wow, that drop. That's gonna be.
But they have great chemistry. Connor and Wilhelmina have great chemistry. Those two actors, Grant Buller and Vanessa Williams, great chemistry, and that continues on into season four.
It's like, it's hard not to have bad chemistry with Vanessa Williams.
And they're both two gorgeous people.
Gorgeous too.
I love a beautiful person.
I did love the whole, like, I've never had sex in the office, mainly because I don't work in an office.
Yeah.
But that whole idea of like how long were they in there? I feel like it was a really long time. And I thought that was so funny. And like, part of me is like, why did the assistant just like?
and now we get to see once again more of what you don't often see on television. But I'm glad Ugly Betty was right there to do it, and Ugly Betty has done it on more than one occasion. Interracial couple.
Yes, I love a good interracial
couple. And Ugly Betty was right there to do this with Vanessa Williams' character. Interracial couples.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something that's still not done as often on television. I feel getting better, but it's still not done as often.
Shonda Rhimes was a
real
Shonda
Rhimes is very,
Was there started to be the real proponent of that with
colorblind casting.
Color interracial couples with Grey's Anatomy and Scandal and How to Get Away Murder and Bridgerton. It's always been interracial couples.
I know. It's like, why can't you? I have that in my head where I'm like, why don't, like, you could literally cast anyone and give them parents, right? Who are whatever fucking race. Like, mixed Black people come out looking anyway. Like, my brother has the same skin tone as you do. My sister is somewhere in between us. And my older sister is dark as hell. My nephew looks exactly like me. But my niece looks totally different. And, I mean, I think that we have a huge long way to go. Because I think the only cast, specifically families, they're very specific about families, are, like, usually monoracial. Period. Like, you don't get mixed race families. And it's like, because they can't find mixed race kids to be with them, or like, what? I don't really understand. There's tons of them.
I know there was Mixed-ish. Yeah.
So specific, though. Like, it's in the title.
I mean, I'm just giving a recent example of Black-ish
starting to. And I did like the point that Mixed-ish did make in its trailer when I watched it, which is, if you do, and I think you and I have had this conversation, Kevin, which was, if you look at representation today, so many mixed kids today have a lot more representation, because now we have multiple athletes, ballerinas, rappers who are mixed, and then you have a president and a princess, both of whom are mixed. Back in the 80s, all that was around for representation was DeBarge. And that was really it.
That's because Loving versus Virginia was passed in 74. So none of us legally existed yet. Like, for real, right? Like,
yeah, but I just look back at that and go, wow, for 80s, that was all that was there for representation was DeBarge. That was it.
Sometimes I feel, are we still legally represented? But, you know, that's another conversation.
No, I'll answer the question for you right now. But Ugly Betty did a good job at showing that to us in this episode, you know, and I think that's what I really found so endearing about just kind of getting to come back to it, was seeing how ahead of themselves they were, you know, showing all different kinds of people and giving them all humanity. Like, the show is kind of just has humanity in a little nutshell, like a little pistachio, you know?
Yeah, and that's what this show, like, you know, and we were talking about this earlier on our other podcast, like, there hasn't been a nice homey family show like this at all. Not every walk of life and every sexuality is comfortable, you know, if that makes sense, you know. Yep. Like a family comfortable show.
Trying to think.
Where it's like, yeah, clearly the son is not going to be straight, but it's not a big deal.
Like,
and they let him, and they let him come out at his own time.
Good about it, though, is Good Girls.
Ah, I haven't seen Good Girls, but I've heard good things.
Good Girls does a really good job at handling queer and different race families. And, I mean, I guess it's a Black and a white family, but even so, they're the one of the main characters' daughter is trans, and then she transitions into a boy, and the way they do it is just so seamless.
Yeah,
you know, it's really cool.
It's nice to have now
we have an actress, a known actress, who has an openly trans son.
Gabrielle Union.
But in addition to Gabrielle Union, Jean Smart.
Oh, Gene, yeah.
Gene Smart adopted a little girl from China, but now he's her son.
You know,
he's
a
transgendered man.
You know who else has a
trans... And he's really young, too, so he knew early on.
Yeah.
And you know who else has a transgender child? Miss Scream Queen herself.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis has a...
Does she?
Yeah. I just recently found that out.
I hope that more and more of these celebrities are going to come out, because I think it'll really, just like how Harvey Milk said back in the 80s, if you're gay, come out. That way more people know.
Yeah. And I think that Ugly Betty in a way kind of set the foundation, because I watched this kid as a show. I mean, show as a kid. And my dad used to be like, you and your mom and your Ugly Betty show, because I think my dad was picking up on all of the I think they are queer themes in general, right? Like sexual expression is clearly a huge part of this show, which when the show was on was not really, you know, that wasn't a part of our culture. The son is gay and everybody's pretty cool with it. There's gay people in the fashion. And shows most of the people in fashion are straight in this, you know? But I think there's those undertones that kind of set the course of where we were going to go into the 2010s and 2020s.
And the main theme of the show is loving yourself for who you are, no matter what anyone else thinks.
Yeah.
The main theme of the show.
Or wasn't it like inspired by like the Devil Wears Prada?
It definitely took a lot of Prada references, and especially in the first season. Yeah. In the pilot episode, they used the same song from the opening credits, Suddenly I See by Katie Tunstall, for the end credits of Devil Wears Prada. So they definitely, the pilot was shot before Prada, but they clearly went back and, you know, after the Devil Wears Prada became a big hit, they clearly went back and threw in as many callbacks as they could. Because this came on in the fall of 2006 after Prada had come out in the summer of 2006. So 2006 was really like a year of fashion in
okay, yeah, but you know, they're all connected. They're listening to each other. They knew that the Devil Wears Prada was going to come out, and they knew that it was going to be a smash hit.
I don't think they knew it was going to be as big of a hit as they did. I mean, okay, that was a surprise.
First of all, you have Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
Nobody was seeing that coming as a multi-million dollar hit, though, but I was glad it happened because
Meryl Streep was
okay.
Well, because it proved that women over a certain age can still open a movie, and Meryl Streep opened that movie.
Yeah, but Meryl Streep knew that she could do it, and her producers knew that she could do it. That's why they threw so much money at it and her. Yeah.
Let me look it up real quick. They weren't expecting it to do as well as it did, but I'm glad it did, because they always say that once women are a certain age, oh, you can't do this. It's like, no, that's not true.
Hollywood don't allow them to do it. That's the thing. That's what happened to Bette Davis. She fought against that.
Speaking of Jamie Lee Curtis, after Halloween came out in 2018, she broke a box office record for a headliner of a movie over the age of 50, biggest opening weekend ever, and that's Jamie Lee Curtis.
And The Morning Show with Jennifer Aniston, she's so pretty in this show.
Yes.
Oh my God.
In her finest hour as an actress.
And this she's smart in Hacks. Yes. She opens the show because who is she? She's smart.
So it had about a 35 to 41 million budget for Devil Wears Prada and 326 million. So that was a super smash. So
that's crazy.
I'm glad it did that well, because once again, it fights the stereotypes of, oh, women, this women. And I'm glad that more and more stuff is coming out that fights that stereotype.
Yeah. Well, and then you have, Ugly Betty. It's all about women, right? Yeah. Really what the show's about. And then you have, America Ferrera went on to do it again with Superstore.
And Yentified on Netflix. She's directing and producing that show. And it's
what's she doing now?
It's called Yentified, Gentfied. It's about, I don't know what it's about. It's about a Mexican-American family or a Mexican family. It's on Netflix, and she's producing and directing that show.
I'll have to look at that, because I knew that she left Superstore to go do producing and directing, but I didn't know what project she was going to do. And I hadn't really like looked it up. That's so cool. I have to look her up. That's so awesome.
I love her.
Me too.
Every single thing she does, like,
I've been a fan since the Disney Channel movie she did in the mid-2000s called Gotta Kick It Up.
I've been a fan.
Shut up. What?
You've seen that movie, right, Kevin?
Of course I have. But like she was
Yolanda. She was in Gotta Kick It Up.
Yeah, you're like 6 years older than me, right?
Yeah, I'll be 33 in 10 days.
How okay. Old are you? So
you're about 5 years older than me. What?
How old are you?
28.
Oh.
Yeah.
I turned 30 in January.
And I'll be 33 in 10 days.
What day do you turn 30?
What day do I turn 30? On the 17th.
Okay.
January.
I turned 29 on the 20th.
Of January?
Yeah.
I mean, the 17th is the best day because Betty White is born on the 17th, Michelle Obama, James Earl Jones, Zooey Deschanel.
And then who
it's not a competition, but Martin Luther King Day follows on my birthday. like every
other. Oh, I'm so glad that you get to have the holiday, but I have Betty White and Eartha Kitt and Michelle Obama and everybody who's Jim Carrey. And
if we're gonna brag about people we share a birthday with, here we go. I'll give you my list. I got Jamie Lee Curtis.
But Betty White.
I know. You got Betty White. I heard you. I have two of the Avengers. I have Mark Ruffalo and Scarlett Johansson.
But Betty White.
I have legendary Oscar winner Geraldine Page.
Betty White. You know how old Betty White is turning on
this? Yes, 100.
She's turning 100.
Yes.
The guy that killed President Lincoln, I think his birthday was on January 20th.
John Wilkes Booth. I mean,
Wilkes Booth. Yeah.
Do you have any other notable people besides Wilkes Booth on your birthday?
You know, there every 4 years a new president is inaugurated. So 2016 was the best birthday present I've ever got.
You mean 2017? Because a president wasn't inaugurated on 2016. He was inaugurated on 2017.
Details, George. Details.
He was elected in 2016, but wasn't officially inaugurated till
the time stopped for a whole 6 months.
I didn't turn on my TV at all that day. I just didn't want to watch. I was like, I can't watch.
I cried.
What I kept experiencing the whole day was, do you remember that scene in Bridesmaids with Maya Rudolph when she had on the dress?
Yeah.
She was trying to walk across. She was like, it's happening. It's happening. It happened. And I felt like, okay, Donald Trump is Maya Rudolph and the white dress is the United States of America. And she's shitting all over it, just like he's shitting all over the country.
You have Rainn Wilson on your birthday. I love Rainn Wilson.
Ooh, do I really? Who else?
Yeah, and you have Evan Peters. And you have...
So was there anything else from the episode that we wanted to... I wanted to make sure we touched on everything we wanted to discuss.
I'm good.
Kevin?
I am just so happy to have been reintroduced to Ugly Betty because I'm gonna watch it. I think I'm gonna find the time to do it. And then George, I'm just gonna call you up. You don't even have to put me back on the podcast. I'm just gonna call you up at like 3 a.m. in the morning and be like, oh my gosh, I'm on an episode.
Oh, our friend Jessica kept texting us where she was texting us
in the middle of the night.
She got hooked on it. She was like going through the whole series and just texting us.
And we were in a group text and in like at 1 o'clock in the morning, I get a text and like, congratulations. I already know this.
I do have to say one last thing about this episode though. Oh my God, what a great dramatic ending. Yes. Because Ignacio has a heart attack.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
And you're going to start to really see the struggle of balancing family and career now.
Yeah. Oh God.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's a good show.
Yeah. So let's do the sign off without further ado. My name is Steven.
My name is George.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.